Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Liberty and the Law, the podcast series that examines the critical elements of a strong legal defense in criminal cases. Join respected attorney James Doerr for this lively discussion on the rights of criminal defendants and the important role defense attorneys play in our legal system.
The court system in the United States is designed to, among other things, protect the constitutional rights of citizens. Each month here on Liberty and the Law, we discuss various court cases or legal concepts related to actions of the court. Today, we'll talk about what's known as the exclusionary rule and its relevance in a number of cases over the years. Hi, everybody. This is Jim Mitchell, and joining me today, as he does each month, is Lavelle Law criminal defense attorney James Doerr. James, this is a topic I know you pay close attention to in your work, and I'm going to need some guidance here. So you ready to kind of help and walk our way through this one?
Yeah, this should be good for us, Jim. It touches on a lot of other subjects that we discussed in detail, and it gets into that kind of nuts and bolts for the defense attorney. So yeah, let's jump right in.
Well, for me, I always like to frame the conversation around definition. So what can you tell us about the exclusionary rule in general terms?
All right. Well, exclusionary rule is a judicial creation, really. It's a policy where evidence of crimes is actually excluded from admissibility or from being admissible in court due to a constitutional violation. Most commonly, a violation of search and seizure, Fourth Amendment concerns, whereas an officer did not have a warrant or went beyond his duties. And so that would be the evidence would be excluded as a remedy for a constitutional violation.
And you mentioned the Fourth Amendment, which we talk about frequently. I in some of the reading on this, it also looked like maybe there's some application with the Fifth Amendment as well.
Right, with the self-incrimination, there's some pretty. This is strong evidence of guilt in these cases. It could be, evidence seized improperly, or it could be a statement by the defendant. Well, in a statement incriminating oneself, admitting to a crime or some details even of a crime doesn't have to be a wholehearted admission, but you can verify certain details that police wouldn't know about. That's strong evidence that could be used against somebody in court. And the rationale is if that evidence was illegally obtained, improperly obtained by the police, well, that shouldn't be used in a matter of fundamental fairness and due process rights and, protections of the Constitution against, improper searches and seizures and self-incrimination. Well, that evidence should not be used against that defendant in court.
Now, you've got me taking notes here already, so I want to make sure I got this phrase right that you mentioned in the first answer. I think you called it a judicial creation. Is it clear that this isn't really a statute or a law, but it's rather the outgrowth of judicial opinions?
Right. At the outset, this was this is a creation by the Supreme Court, and then later held applicable to the states. Now, states as well, they can pass, Illinois can pass its own statutes, and we've talked a little bit about this in the past, Jim, with the different, the entities out there. You got the federal law and you have state law, and state law can grant more rights than the Constitution and federal Constitution can guarantee. So, the states get involved in some of that too, and they can pass a statute codifying the exclusionary rule if they want. So it's something that has been codified by certain states. Certain provisions have been. But it is a creation of U.S. Supreme Court.
Now, tell me about how a defense attorney like yourself would invoke this. Is this something you would do as a pretrial motion, or might it actually come up during testimony in a trial?
Right. This would be a pretrial motion, Jim. I mean, we talked in the past about certain, provisions of search and seizure. Let's just say the most common one. We want to there's evidence of drugs illegally obtained. The officer, let's just say, blatantly did not bother to get a warrant. Showed up at somebody's house, went through the front door and seized it. Okay. And I would, as a defense attorney, you'd want to file a pretrial motion. Alerting the court and then demanding a hearing on the fact that this evidence was illegally and improperly seized and should not be used against the defendant at the case in chief and trial. So it would be a pretrial motion designed to exclude evidence based on how it was obtained by the police.
And are there certain landmark cases that sort of establish the exclusionary rule, or certain ones that are always referenced when you make a motion and looking for precedent?
They would be, and you know, we're looking at the Weeks decision to start with, and the Map versus Ohio making it binding on the state. But there's a lot, you know, depending. A lot of times when you argue these kind of motions in court, you're very specific about what evidence you're trying to exclude and the basis for that. So you have to have it, your arguments backed up by the proper case law. So depending on, like, what we discussed, it could be a self-incrimination argument, or it could be a improper search and seizure. So it'll be very particularized, the case law that we cite in support of our motion.
And as you go through the gathering of evidence and see what the prosecution has and start to build your case, is anything that is gathered without a warrant sort of a red flag, and that's something you go after right away?
Yeah, that's a big red flag. You know, warrantless seizures, you know, depending on where it's, if it's a warrantless entry of a house, it would be per se unreasonable. And the state would have to justify some exception that gets them around what the constitutional rule is, okay, such as, you know, an exclusionary rule in general. You know, it's a public policy. There's a reason for it, to enforce constitutional rights, to put some teeth in the Constitution. Now, the prosecution can argue the other side. Hey, this is, in reality, there's guilty people being left free because this is evidence of guilt, and it's strong evidence of guilt.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the prosecutors would argue, you know, they have arguments for admissibility of the evidence, depending on, again, the facts alleged.
Now, for our listeners, if they've downloaded past episodes of Liberty and the Law, should be familiar with James Doerr, the Lavelle Law defense attorney that joins us. He's a source of great information and legal guidance during our regular discussions on this podcast. And after you listen to this one, if you haven't in the past, drop in at lavellelaw.com. You can learn more about James and the work he's done during his career. Plenty of information for you there. We just talked, James, a little bit about seizures, a warrantless gathering of evidence. Can you still challenge evidence if there was a warrant, but you feel that warrant wasn't properly issued or properly executed?
Right. It could be the details of the warrant. So something that the evidence that the police are looking for, they have to spell out in particular specificity what they're looking for. And the police can only go in those areas to look where it's reasonable to do so. So, for example, there's something called the sugar bowl theory out there. If you're looking for evidence of stolen television sets, you can't go and look in the sugar bowl for that. So officers, they know when they want to get these warrants, well, you better name some other instrumentalities of the crime, such as in a drug trade, you're going to say, well, they're looking for cash associated with the drug trade. So it gets you can look around and really in detail, or drugs, it could be anywhere. But if you're looking for, say, a bigger evidence of crime, you'd want to list smaller things like receipts and cash and you know, certain evidence that would go along with that to help establish the case.
Now, let's put you in a situation where you go through the pretrial motion to have evidence excluded, and the judge agrees with you, so that evidence is not admissible for that case. Now, is it just under those terms? And by that, I mean, do you still need to be prepared for the prosecution to try and discover it in some other way prior to
right,
or during the trial?
Excellent question, Jim, because a good prosecutor, even though they, you know, say the judge finds there's a constitutional violation, that doesn't mean it's automatically excluded. We also have to look at whether that's reasonable under the law to exclude the evidence, or is there an exception that would allow the prosecutor to get that evidence in. So the prosecutors look for, you know, certain common exceptions. One would be an officer acting in good faith, such as point out a warrant. Let's say an officer has a good faith belief he's got a warrant for any searches of home, but it's the wrong address or some detail is wrong. Well, if he's relying in good faith on that warrant, where's the culpable, you know, conduct on the police that you're trying to prohibit, you know, with a deterring effect? You know, the supporters of the exclusionary rule say it should deter police officers from acting in illegal manner to obtain evidence. So they exclude the evidence as a deterrent. Well, an officer acting in good faith not likely to be deterred. You know, so that's what a prosecutor would argue. There's a good faith exception to the evidence being admitted. So there can be a technical violation, but there may be a workaround for the prosecutor to try to get that evidence in. So that's one of the things as a defense attorney you're going to be looking out for. You know, watch out for the prosecutor switching gears, because the prosecutor can go from arguing there is no constitutional violation here to, well, judge, yes, there is a constitutional violation, but it's reasonable and the evidence should still be admitted. So then you got to work, you know, you got to be ready for that attack.
And if there is something found to be wrong with a warrant or the way the warrant was gathered or executed, something is excluded, can the state go back and request a proper warrant and go and execute that same search again under corrected process?
Well, once that evidence is seized, that would be tough to go back in time. However, there's doctrines like the inevitable discovery doctrine, or there's been cases where warrants have been started and processed, and then there was some other technicality in between. So, there's no blanket answer on that one, Jim, but really what you have to look for is what the evidence that we're talking about, how it was obtained, and were the police actions reasonable? Did they rely on precedent? Did they follow normal rules? So there may be a way to get evidence in that would have been otherwise excluded. Again, looking at the police conduct.
And you referenced Weeks and a few other cases in terms of how the exclusionary rule, which is what we're talking about today, came to be or has sort of gathered strength over the years. And we've been talking about using it in a trial. Can the exclusionary rule be used, I guess, retroactively as a basis for an appeal?
Boy, that's a tough question, Jim. I'm not sure on that one. I tell you what, let me just answer some basics. If there's a violation, it can definitely be it's an appealable issue. And I'm not sure I quite understand the question there, but we'll come back at that one on a future date.
Well, yeah,
think about that.
I stumbled across something in research, and it looked like someone had lost a case and then went back and appealed. But we always like to go, into things in future discussions, so I'm going to table that one.
Yeah.
But I want you to do this for me.
Yeah,
let's pin
that one. We'll come back to that.
Okay. Now, as I said, this one was I consider it to be fairly complex, and a lot, obviously, with some of these questions, there's a lot to it. What else would you tell a young defense attorney who's maybe just getting their start, and you've got a couple of decades of great experience, but what should young defense attorneys know about the exclusionary rule and how they should utilize it in their toolbox?
Well, basically, you're going to start and analyze the case like we talk about, Jim. You're going to look at the facts. You're going to interview your own client. You're going to look at all the police, all the evidence that's been turned over by the prosecution, and you're going to see. You're going to look to see if there's a constitutional violation of some sort in there. If you find one, if you find something that looks like it's questionable, you're going to file the pretrial motion and do your due diligence, do your discovery, and, ask the questions and find out if there's a violation there. And if so, be ready for the prosecutor's argument about allowing the evidence to come in anyway. It's looking for some kind of workaround, the exclusionary rule.
Well, we always appreciate the time you take, and I know it's valuable to many of us, including, as I mentioned there, the young attorneys. So that's part of what we try and do here is kind of get into the details of these conversations. So my thanks to Attorney James Dorr for joining us today. Again, LavelleLaw.com is a spot you can visit to get more information about this topic, about many other topics in the defense realm. And you can always reach James at 847-705-7555. That's 847-705-7555. We want to thank everyone for joining us today and look forward to a future episode of Liberty and the Law.